Welcome to .NET Rambles, a weekly podcast where Andy and Rowan discuss all things .NET related. Good morning, Rowan. How are you doing today?
Morning, Andy. Really well, thanks. How are you doing? It's been a little while.
Excellent. It has been a while. Yeah, I'm doing pretty well, but it's getting a bit cold. That's the only thing. I've had to turn the heating on, which obviously nobody wants to do right now. So,
It's coming towards the end of the year at the time of this recording, isn't it? So we're in late December. UK's going through a cold snap. Energy prices are through the roof. So it's a bit of a juxtaposition we're all in, really, isn't it?
That's right. But we'll carry on. We'll all get through this together and, come out the other side. So,
I think the way that we're going to get through it is really to lean back on our community. How's that for a segue into the episode?
I like what you did there. That's pretty good. Well, I was about to ask you what we're going to talk about today, but it's basically that, isn't it? It's all things community-based, who to follow, who to listen to, who to watch. So it's all the people that sort of you come across as you're sort of developing, all these people that pop up on YouTube and that and things like that. So, yeah, we were going to have a chat about who we follow, who we listen to, how we get our news, basically. How do we get our tech news and keep up to date with what's going on and what's coming, that sort of thing, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Cool. With that in mind, let's start off with some not so random facts about one of the pillars of the dev community, and that being Stack Overflow. I thought it might be useful just to take a trip down memory lane and think about where Stack Overflow has come from. Have a little bit of a think about what development used to be like before Stack Overflow, actually.
Sure.
You and I were around pre-2008.
In the dinosaur days,
In the dinosaur days. And if you got stuck, Google was obviously there and there are lots of sites available, but there was just no Stack Overflow. So, you really had to rummage through the search results and rummage through sites like ExpertsExchange.
Careful, yeah.
Carefully. And try and find the answers to your questions.
It's difficult. Yeah, so it was a minefield. It was, it was good. The internet was amazing when it came out because, even prior to that, it's like, how do we get our information? It was all, it was all books. Or you learn off your colleagues. And I remember, lots and lots of books. There was a bookshelf, the first couple of places I worked, massive bookshelf with all these huge books about ADO, RDO, various other tools and technologies. So, you always used to refer to them. So, the internet coming along was great, but then sort of putting the information together and having things like the communities around stuff, and Stack Overflow is probably it fixed all the problems of the existing ones, didn't it? It brought it all together, made it community driven.
It certainly filled a gap, didn't it? A massive gap that Joel Spolsky and Jeff Atwood obviously could see a mile off, and that's why they came out with Stack Overflow. And they produced this question and answer site with curated answers and built a really clever way of encouraging people and motivating people to contribute, through the gamification. It was just such a winning formula. It was back in 2008 that Jeff Atwood sent out the first invitations, which encouraged subscribers to his blog, which is still called Coding Horror, although he's not particularly active on it anymore. But he sent out invitations to people who he knew through his blog, inviting them to the private beta for their new website, and limiting the use of that testing to only those invited users. And so that was on the 31st of July, 2008. Then on the 15th of September 2008, they announced a public beta version, and that was open to the general public, who were now able to come along and basically use Stack Overflow for the first time and seek assistance for their programming related issues. Around about the same time, they designed the Stack Overflow logo, and that was decided through a voting process.
Very democratic, wasn't it?
Stack Overflow. Very democratic, yeah. And that was the whole idea. It was all community driven. Atwood and Spolsky had this idea for something that really needed to be driven by the community and needed to be vetted and curated at every step of the way by the community. And even the gamification process underwent a lot of iterations, through those beta testing days where they got a lot of feedback and they tried some ideas. they revised them, and it was all community driven. I guess that, that's
Based on reputation, wasn't it? And you know, the more you put in, the more sort of trust you got.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, that leads quite nicely into some of the statistics. So back in 2013, they found that 75% of users only asked one question. So 75%, which, you know, three quarters of all users only asked one question. 65% only answered one question, and only 8% of the users were answering more than five questions.
Cool. It's really low, isn't it? Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it was quite low back then. So to address that, they came up with the idea of a mentorship program, which had a had a massive impact, and it apparently resulted in having about 50% increase in the in user scores on average. So it meant that lots of people were contributing more. In 2011, they noticed that 92% of the questions were answered in a mean time, an average time of about 11 minutes.
And not bad, is it, to get an answer? Yeah.
Exactly. So obviously the whole way the thing was structured was to motivate people to provide answers, to make sure that the site wasn't, you know, wasn't a desolate sort of place that, no one hung out on. And the whole gamification structure was really structured around encouraging people to provide good quality answers in a timely fashion.
Great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. In 2013, they started introducing software to automatically delete closed questions that met certain criteria, including questions that had no answers at all for a certain amount of time. Then around about the same time, just in terms of some numbers, what did they have? They had 443,000 of the 1.3 million registered users had answered at least one question, and of those, approximately 6,000, which equated to 0.46% of the total user count, had earned a reputation score greater than 5,000. So it just sort of points to the fact that there were lots of people registered and using with with back then not so many people contributing. So they obviously spent a lot of time revising the gamification aspects to try and increase the amount of people contributing.
Interesting. Yeah.
In terms of the tech stack, it was it was written in C sharp, used a SQL Server database, and I think back in the early days, architecturally, it was fairly simple. They had a load balancer, they had some load balanced web servers, and some SQL servers off the back of that. I think in 2013, the hardware list was something like two SQL servers, two web servers. They had a Redis server, a Tag Engine server, an Elasticsearch server. Had a load balancer sitting in front of that, you know, networking and routing, and I think an ASA, an adaptive security appliance, and that was really it.
Not a lot to run all that,
exactly.
Impressive. As far as I know, I remember, back sort of in those days, it was, you know, a really big thing that they were running that sort of site on Microsoft technology, because you know, a lot of the big sites, they didn't use Microsoft technologies. It wasn't, you know, obviously Microsoft used them and they were the big sort of pusher of it, but this was great to see, you know, the tech that we were using being used in this way, because then you go, well, actually that validates it, we can do these sorts of things.
So exactly, one of the biggest really sites that we know about is, you know, is using this stack and really getting away with not having to scale horizontally you know, much at all. So
absolutely. And I know the so I was going to say something else that crops up every now and then is there was the Stack Overflow database, you could download it as well. It was like a community resource. You're allowed to download it and sort of have a look at the structure of it and how it was set up. And I know there's quite a few courses that use it as their basis for, you know, tuning SQL engines and, you know, learning how to query databases. So it's another thing they've given back to the community, which is quite nice.
Absolutely, yeah, making all that data available.
Yeah.
And just finally on that architectural point, I don't think the architecture has changed a great deal over the years. You know, obviously as the user count and the, you know, the traffic's gone up over time, largely I think that architecture has sort of remained the same. So pretty impressive.
Great stuff. I think they try and move forward with tech, don't they, with the versions of .NET and stuff. I think they try and keep up to date with that so they can use the latest, greatest. But, but yeah, that's impressive. It's been And I just can't believe it's that old as well, running since 2008.
Since 2008. And obviously off the back of Stack Overflow came the Stack Exchange platform, which is now obviously rolled out across a number of different domains. So it's not just programming questions. You can run a Stack Exchange site for any subject you like. I think, there was a bit of a process around applying for a Stack Exchange site. And I remember the guys talking about the fact that they wanted active communities that attracted, lots of people and attracted good question and answers, basically.
Yeah,
so
of course they did. Yeah, keep the sites alive and that. Yeah, it makes sense. So.
Exactly. I think you had to meet a certain criteria in order to be able to set one up, because the last thing they wanted was, a whole load of desolate question and answer sites just sort of scattered over the internet. Yeah. But
absolutely. Wow.
Yeah, really, really impressive. And Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange to some extent, but certainly from a programming point of view, Stack Overflow is really fundamental to development these days, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, there's so much knowledge on there. That's a great thing. And it's great that, community comes together like that and gives away this information for free. That's always been the thing of the internet, is all this information is there for people. There are more paywalls popping up, but things like Stack Overflow, it's great that they're free. There's really good people on it. You've got to be careful. There's some not so great people on it, like anything, which is the balancing act with these sorts of communities. You will get really good people, and then you get other people that they just like, some of your stats, a lot of people just take from it and give back. But no, I mean, it works really well. So credit to them. They built something amazing, and I think it's going to go on for a long time because people find it very, very useful. I mean, I do. We're both experienced devs. We've been doing it a long time, but we don't know it all. We mention this on quite a few of our podcasts, don't we? That, there's no way you can know everything. You've got to have these resources available.
Absolutely.
To talk to people. This is where this sort of stuff. So, I touched on it when we started speaking, but obviously this podcast was all about the people that we listen to, follow, and stuff like that. And, that's what you want to do. All these people are sharing information. It's useful to hear about their experiences. I mean, that's what we're trying to do with this, aren't we? We chat a lot about stuff, and we thought, it's useful to record this stuff and let other people listen to it, because somebody might get something out of it. Other people might just think it's a couple of guys talking a load of rubbish. But absolutely. I mean, normally we were doing this in a pub with beer, so I'm sure the conversation was much more interesting. But hopefully this is useful to people. Who knows? But we wanted to with this one talk about who's who we listen to, and just give people an idea, because there's people that we come across. I come across people all the time, and you say, I'll follow them, or I'll bookmark their site or whatever, or add them to my reader, just so you can sort of, they tweet every now and then, or they might do a blog post, which is interesting. And it's just useful to keep up with things. And interestingly, some of this comes up in interviews as well. I've been asked a few times in interviews, how do you keep up to date with technology, and, what's going on in your industry, and things like, following the people in the companies that build your tools is perfect, because they're going to tweet about it first. They're going to do videos about the new features and stuff like that. So, these are, it's good people to follow, and you get the information directly from the companies. And, a lot of these people, obviously, some of them, they stop working, and they actually, well, I say stop working, they don't work at a company anymore. They work for themselves.
They give up their day job, don't they?
Yeah, they give up their day job and do YouTube videos and stuff. And literally all they do is they just
move on to tutorial-based stuff. Yeah.
It's massive. And these are really good people. They've been doing it for a long time, so they know what they're doing.
It is a really important point, because in this game, in the development game, things are changing, weekly, daily sometimes, aren't they? Mm. And you've just got to keep up with everything that's going on. As you say, there's so much to learn, so why not be aware of as many people as you can, and follow them and keep up with what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we'll touch on it later, but we're going to rattle through a load of people on Twitter, a load of podcasts, a load of YouTube, all sorts of different things. But the key thing to remember is there's no way you can read everything. There's no way you can watch everything. There's no way you can listen to everything. So these are all things, these are touch points really, to sort of say, these people, you'll get some useful stuff from these people, and you might hear something first, or you might follow it and see a really useful video. But do you know what, I think between us, we've put this list together. There's some that I follow, some that you follow. There's no way that I can watch all of yours and you can watch all of mine. they're ideas for people to sort of go and listen to and watch. So
absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
It's so, no pressure to know all of these people and know everything they're talking about every day. Yeah,
exactly, exactly. Really, this is just a sprinkling of people that we follow, but please use this as a springboard to go off and, you know, perhaps follow some of these people, perhaps find your own people to follow and stick with. So absolutely. Let's get into it. Who are you? Cool. Let's start with the Microsoft lot. Yeah. Who are your go-to people to follow in terms of the Microsoft crew, you know, working on the .NET team or the Azure team or you know, front end team or something else?
Two that really come to mind straight away with this was Scott Hanselman was the obvious one.
Absolutely.
Whether it's just because he's, I don't know, maybe he's just the most vocal person in there and you hear him. He's a really, really good speaker. Got a really interesting background as well.
He does, doesn't he?
You know,
yeah.
He's done a few things and it just amazes me that, you know, this guy can get up on stage and just so easily delivers anything, really, whatever he's talking about. It's just, you know, it's so smooth. It's just nicely done. He's a good speaker.
He's a great communicator, exceptionally accomplished from a technical point of view, and a brilliant performer, actually. If you ever get the chance to see Hanselman live, a lot of these guys, to be honest, you know, a lot of these guys that work at Microsoft are really on a different level in terms of how they're able to communicate, how they're able to deliver some of these concepts through a talk, their technical expertise is incredible. I've seen Hanselman a couple of times and each time I'm just sort of blown away. I've met him a couple of times as well. And I have to admit, I've been quite starstruck.
It's crazy, isn't it? These people, I mean, we said it years ago, that suddenly these people, they become rock stars. It's really strange because you get so many followers and so many people wanting to meet you. That's great you've met him and actually heard him speak because, you know, I've obviously seen the videos, but yeah, in person, it's great. And it's weird. I mean, we're waxing lyrical about this guy, but, you know, at the end of the day, he's just a dev. You know, that's what he does.
He's a nice guy. He's a lovely guy as well.
I'm sure
everyone's aware of him, but if you're not aware of him, check out his blog and his podcast, Hanselman. He has been running that podcast for a long time, for very many years. He doesn't miss any episodes. He's there every week and really interesting to follow. Who else we got?
Yeah, so another one, Steve Sanderson, popped up years and years ago. I think he popped up, back in the days when sort of the new JS frameworks were coming about. So you had AngularJS and things like that. He built one called Knockout and we started using it. So I got to know him through that and he had a, you know, really nice website around it, really good tutorials, really pushing the product. And he was doing speaking and he was explaining how this stuff worked and seemed to be a really nice guy, really knowledgeable, really, really good videos about the various bits. He now does a lot with Blazor.
Brilliant.
So obviously he's quite busy at the moment with talks and all these people start popping up on the various chats that go round. So, you know, if you're doing maybe the DDDs or the .NET conferences, so they pop up on those sorts of things. Steve Sanderson, another good one to follow and listen to.
Absolutely. Let's sort of rip through these. You've got the likes of David Fowler, Damien Edwards, Scott Hunter, even Scott Goo, you know, who heads
Scott
up
Goo,
the,
yeah, he was...
the whole of the Azure side
yeah.
at Microsoft, doesn't he? But, you know, the likes of David Fowler and to some extent Damien Edwards, quite vocal on Twitter. David Fowler is now very heavily involved with the architecture of ASP.NET Core and, you know, even contributes to some of the underlying .NET stuff. Really interesting to follow. The two of them, Damien Edwards and David Fowler, I think originally created Signal R together, didn't they?
Oh, wow, that's rings a bell, yeah.
You know, which was brilliant. So David Fowler is a partner software architect. That's his role at the moment. Damien Edwards, a PM architect on the .NET framework. Scott Hunter is the VP director of product. And Scott Goo, I don't even know what his title is now, but he sits above all of them. And quite often when you hear these guys talk, they're all, you know, they talk about the Scots, you know, the lesser Scots and the greater Scots. So you've got, you know, Scott Goo above Scott Hunter, who's, I think, officially above Scott Hanselman. So those guys are all worth following. They're always tweeting talking about the latest and greatest happenings right. in the framework.
Absolutely. And if you go and follow one of these people, you know, if you go and follow any of these, really, you'll get other suggestions for similar people. So, you know, it's good to go and have a look at that and just, yeah, follow them and see what they tweet. You know, they're not, some of them are more than others, but yeah, it's just useful to sort of know what's going on. And again, like I said, these are people, you know, right at the heart of the tools that we use day in, day out. So they know what's going on. And, you know, interestingly, you do sort of hear the interesting stories about these people, because there was something that happened a while ago now. I can't remember how far back, but, you know, there was something in Visual Studio where it wasn't going to appear in the community edition, but it was going to appear in the paid for edition.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were up in arms about it because it was, it was sort of showing how Microsoft were trying to monetize things. And, you know, for a tool that had always been free and not really limited by the versioning of it.
Right.
And, you know, it's an easy way to feed back to these people and make them realize that actually, you know, they've got all these followers, and lots of followers tell them, you know, we're not happy with this, and they can report that directly back to the people that can make decisions. So, you know, it's good to sort of have access to these people.
Absolutely. Definitely. Absolutely.
Cool. Okay.
Brilliant. Well, you've got the likes of Mads Christensen, which I'm sure lots of people are familiar with. He does a lot of work with Visual Studio, doesn't he? Again, lots of blogs and lots of useful videos. You were talking about just yesterday.
I mentioned, again, he popped up. I think it was YouTube suggested it to me. Just popped up as either that or it was one of the Microsoft emails I get. Just literally coming up with some new features. It was really short. It was only about 11, 12-minute video, but it was just about some new features in Visual Studio. Well, I say new, it's 2022, it's not that new. Obviously they keep adding bits to it, but yeah, just went through a few things. He builds lots of extensions, and it seems like what they do is they trial these extensions, and if they're very good, they then get bundled into the actual product. So he then goes through them and sort of explains them. But yeah, just useful to see how he uses it. And you know, sometimes you get a look into their daily workflow, because he was using it and explaining about tracking the window location. So he stores his window setups so that when he's on a laptop, it's set up slightly differently to when he's on a widescreen monitor,
right?
Or a two screen setup versus a three screen setup, or whatever he's got. But you know, I've never used it, but I thought actually it's a useful thing to know about, that you can do these things, because it saves you having to keep set up your environments. But yeah, little things like that pop up, and it's just useful to learn these things that, you know, somebody then has a problem and needs a solution, you might have heard of it through one of these guys.
So, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Then there's the various program managers. So, you know, the likes of David Keane, Mads Torkinson. There's loads of program managers across all the different work streams, aren't there? So, I mean, you'll no doubt come across them if you're researching a particular area. You'll come across a blog, you know, where the program manager's talking about the latest release for that particular area. Certainly worthwhile keeping up with them. You've got the likes of the language designers. So, Anders...
I'll let you pronounce that.
Heilsberg.
That'll do.
I think he originally started with Turbo Pascal, went into Delphi, and has since gone on to obviously design, be a key designer of C#, and then onto TypeScript. If you're into F#, Don Syme is still very active. He was one of the original F# designers, and still very active in the community, talking about the latest and greatest features.
I've just been there. Going back to Anders, I was just having a quick Google of him earlier, and he's got his own wiki page. So I think, once somebody gets a wiki page, you can tell they're quite influential in the
absolutely.
Industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's interesting, like you say, see what he did, because, you know, some of the early people, like me and you, He built the tools that we used.
Yes.
You know, because I used Turbo Pascal, I used Delphi a bit.
Yeah.
You know, so, and yeah, Borland, wasn't it, back in Borland days? So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's great seeing people like that and thinking, wow, I started my career on things like that. So,
yeah. Interesting. Yeah, incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, there are literally tens of, if not hundreds of Microsoft people that you could follow. And these are, you know, this is just a sprinkling of them, really. But, you know, moving on from there, you've obviously got the .NET blogs that a lot of these people sort of blog on. You've got things like Channel 9, which is sort of Microsoft platform for releasing a whole load of tutorial videos. And if you're active in development, you've no doubt come across them. And, of course, all of the Azure artifacts that are available.
Yeah, loads of stuff there. I mean, yeah, they've obviously, this is all, they've got their own Twitter accounts. A lot of these things then go over into YouTube as well. So, you know, if you follow one, you'll see them posting about videos on the other. So, yeah, no, absolutely. And then the other thing happens as well. You start sort of looking at YouTube videos and you pick up people, and then you start following them on Twitter as well. So you see when they post new videos and stuff, and or when they do little shorts or something. So, Yeah. I mean, I picked up on people like Nick Chapsass is a very recent one. He's become very, very popular very quickly on YouTube. You know, I think he's been a developer for a while, but for some reason, people just started loving his YouTube videos. You know, he gets really, really good feedback on them. They're quite short. He sort of touches on one little subject and dives into it, which is really good. So yeah, things like that, really good. And then obviously, yeah, follow him on Twitter, and he sort of, that then builds a community around it. So he starts chatting to people and they start asking questions, you know, and you start learning things from that, which is great. But it's not, I mean, a lot of this, we've talked about Microsoft and we've talked about .NET devs and, you know, the Channel 9 and stuff, which is very much based on what we do with C#, Visual Studio, all of that tech. But obviously we touch on JavaScript. So what I do is I follow some JavaScript devs as well. And there's a thing called Syntax FM, which is a podcast, which we'll mention in a minute. But, you know, there's a couple of developers from that. And it's, again, it's a nice way of keeping track of what's going on in the JS world. Because, you know, at the moment I'm doing a lot of backend stuff, don't really touch JS. So, you know, you start moving away from it. But yeah, it's useful to have these sort of people to just keep up to date with and get little snippets of information to keep going.
Absolutely. And I guess we're moving into more of the community now, aren't we? So that, you know, that first group of people that work directly for Microsoft, but there's a whole massive community around that. People who are, they might be MVPs, Microsoft MVP, what does MVP stand for?
Microsoft Valued Professional.
Valued Professional, isn't it? Yeah. They might be MVPs. They might just be active in the community. They might, you know, run their own podcast like, you know, Wes Boz and Scott Talinsky.
Yes.
They might just have a really popular blog, you know, like the likes of Iris Klassen, and just be active in the community that way. They may be a tech journalist. So, you know, the likes of Julie Lerman, who's been around for a long time and blogs a lot about, you know, all sorts of areas of .NET development. She's been active in, you know, talked a lot about the Entity Framework, among other areas. Yep. You've got the likes of Troy Hunt, who's a security sort of expert. And, you know, he's got a very popular site called Have I Been Pwned?
Pwned.
Which is a brilliant site.
Yeah, massive.
But,
yeah.
I mean, he pops up on BBC News and that sort of thing from time to time, doesn't he?
Right. I think he talked either talked to the American government or the British government about some security issues,
So he's active in that whole security sort of data breach area. Then you've also got the likes of the old timers like Uncle Bob, Rob Martin, Robert Martin, who's been around since the beginning of all of this, really. Who's written lots of books. He's got his Clean Coders site, he's got his Clean Coders series of books and clean architecture and that sort of stuff. And then also the likes of Jimmy Bogart, who've got open source frameworks like AutoMapper and Mediator, and obviously, you know, writes a lot of, you know, tweets a lot of stuff and has got blogs and that sort of stuff. Then there's the bigger sort of commercial players. You've got the likes of Udi Dehan, who is a DDD SOA sort of advocate, isn't he? He runs particular software is sort of, I guess, the creator of End Service Bus. And talks a lot about that. You've got some of the big authors who've been around for a long time. So the likes of Eric Evans and the Blue Book, the Domain Driven Design book, which is obviously, super popular book. And there's even been revisions of that book that are also just as valuable as the original, or in some ways slightly more valuable. You've obviously got Jeff Atwood and Joel Spolsky that we've already talked about in terms of Stack Overflow. Just on that, actually, I remember when Stack Overflow was coming about, Jeff and Joel had a podcast that they put together. I can't remember what it was called, but I think they only did a few episodes, but it was a really interesting insight into what was going through their head at the time that they were developing Stack Overflow. And they talked a lot about that big gap that they saw on the internet, the problem with the existing sites at the time, around the fact that none of the information was particularly curated very well. And it was just a really good insight into what they were thinking and how they sort of came to develop Stack Overflow. So, all of these people have really interesting points of view, and can you know, can teach you a lot, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's useful to sort of, there's a lot of history there as well. So it's useful to go back. You can sort of listen to the things these guys did years ago and sort of see where they came from and how they got through. So yeah, very interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. Other people, like there's a guy I come across called Matthew Cruz, who is an F-sharp professional, and he does a lot of stuff in the linear programming space and the optimization problems. He's developed a framework called Flips, and he releases a lot of videos at the moment on F-sharp performance. So it's quite a specialist area, but really interesting. He does some deep dives into and does some really sort of interesting technical analysis and benchmarking around certain approaches with different F-sharp data structures. So it's a really targeted stuff, but super interesting stuff. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of, this is the beauty of the internet, isn't it? It allows everyone to share information, share videos, share blogs, record information and get it out there. Yeah. I can't imagine what this profession would be like if it wasn't for the internet, Google, and you know, and all of these communities, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely, that's right. It's so useful having all this stuff, like we keep saying. So okay, cool. So yeah, I mean, that touched on something, you know, obviously this Matthew Cruz, it's interesting to you. I don't follow it so much because it's more F-sharp based, but that just shows, you know, there's so many of these things out there where, you know, you can follow the people you need to follow. And you know, it might be that I need to dip into F-sharp one day, so I now know about this, and you know, it might be touching on something that I really need to sort of get into. So yeah, no, it's useful to know about these things. So I suppose the last one on this section was John Skeet.
Of course, how can we forget John Skeet?
the fount of all knowledge of C-sharp, really, isn't he? So
absolutely.
His book C-sharp in Depth, which I think, you know, most people know about and stuff. So yeah, it's,
and author of the Noda Time Framework,
yes,
which
does
is
that as well, doesn't he?
Which is incredible. And I think I don't know if he is still the highest scorer on Stack Overflow, but certainly was for a number of years.
To be honest, I think it's one of those things he got so high he just couldn't be caught now, because it's like compound interest, really, for him, isn't it? He just keeps getting voted up and up and up. So certainly should be.
Yeah, cool. Certainly worthwhile following if you don't already. So those are the people. Off the back of that, there are obviously a load of podcasts that the people are doing, with the best one obviously being .NET Rambles.
Of course, the one you're listening to now, just in case people aren't aware. And
in case you don't know what the name of it is.
Yeah, they're thinking it was something else, but yeah, no, absolutely. So, And again, the reason we put this together is just put a bit of knowledge out there, you know, it just reminds me about stuff, to be honest. So, you know, it's just useful to talk about stuff, but yeah,
absolutely. But the bigger, more well-known ones, obviously Hansel Minutes with Scott Hanselman, .NET Rocks, Carl Franklin and Richard Campbell, they've been doing that for many years. That those two were really my go-to podcasts when I was back in the days when I was commuting, even when I was living over in Sydney and driving into work. I'd stick one of those on the on in the car as I was driving in, and you know, through various jobs, I've always listened to those guys. You've already mentioned Syntax FM,
yeah, the JavaScript based one, yeah, which is worth a listen, definitely.
Yeah, what other ones have you got on your list?
Yeah, so there's one called The Unhandled Exception. This is a UK .NET dev. I came across it a few months ago, and he has normally always has a guest on, which is quite nice, chatting about various things. Recently, he's talked about Go and Vim, which are, you know, two things I've not looked at that much. So it's quite interesting to hear their points of view on those. It's just, like you say, it's useful in a car journey, you know, commuting. I mean, I've got to go somewhere in a couple of days, so it's quite a long drive. So, you know, I'm going to listen to a few podcasts when I get bored of the news and what's going on the radio. So,
yeah,
I'll listen to a few of these and just catch up to date with things. So, yeah. We mentioned Hanselman, didn't we? .NET Podcast, .NET Core Podcast. Troy Hunt's Weekly Update, if you're into security stuff, is quite a good one. Console.dev was one that came up recently. That was based on, you know, we just saw there's a DevTools email they send out, and off the back of that, they've got a podcast that's useful to listen to. And then another one I listen to a lot is .NET Diaries, which is not so much coding, but very entertaining and interesting to hear about all these things going on the dark side of the internet.
Interesting, slightly different perspective. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, it's good to listen to some of these different perspectives just to give you a, you know, a broader view of, yeah, of what's going on.
Absolutely.
So those are podcasts. Obviously, off the back of that, we've got blogs and newsletters. So things like the, let's rip through them. We don't want to spend too much time on them, but things like the Morning Brew is a very useful resource. Andrew Locke does a thing called .NET Escapades. There's a No Dogma blog by Brian Hogan, who's a software architect, very useful. Alvin Ashcraft's Morning Dew, Console, which you just mentioned. JetBrains have got an interesting .NET tools blog. John Papa, another interesting guy who focuses a lot on front end. Very entertaining guy to listen to anyway. Does a bit of .NET stuff. Jessica Dean was working for Microsoft, but she's quite vocal and active in the DevOps space. Talks a bit about microservices. She was, I think, at the, what year are we? 2022. So 2021 .NET release in November. She did a lot of interesting videos about Dapper, D-A-P-R. Which we've done an episode on, incidentally.
We did, didn't we? That's right. Yeah, she. I've just looking at our website, actually, to remind myself. Yeah, that's right. She was really good. Went into a lot of detail about stuff. And, and again, you go to her website, there's lots of stuff about what she's been talking about and stuff like that. So, well worth a listen.
Worth a visit, jessicadean.com, D-E-E-N. I think she works for AWS now, incidentally. She's moved on from Microsoft. John Skeet's obviously got a blog. Steve Gordon's a local guy to us. We're both down on the south coast of the UK.
Used to go along. And again, it's one of these things, excuse me, you meet these people and sort of you then get to know them. And he was, he was quite vocal, again, like you said about the other people. He's a speaker, did meetups, and, useful guy to sort of know and listen to.
Absolutely. So he's got his blog called Code with Steve, worth a look. Sean Wildermouth, interesting blog, worthwhile keeping up with. AdamSilver.io is a guy that worked for the government, as in gov.uk, or one of the government agencies, and has been quite instrumental in the government design system, really, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think that's how he popped up on our radar. It's just he was involved, I think, with, he put patterns together for the design system. So we came across him, and it's interesting site. Again, being a dev, he's an interaction designer, so it's useful to sort of read about what they do and what they get up to sort of learn more about that side of things, because you have to work with these types of people. You have to work with UX people, UI people, designers. So, it's nice to know what makes them tick, what they need to know, what's interesting to them, so you can, get on with them and work together. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's worthwhile just mentioning our episode on the Gov UK design system. We did a deep dive into that a while back, and it's an interesting area. So if you're looking for an episode to listen to, go back and listen to that.
It is. It's episode 7, if anyone's interested in. It's,
well done.
Great design system, shouldn't be hard.
Lovely. Yeah. Excellent. So what else have we got? I mean, we've covered podcasts, we've covered people, we've covered blogs.
So videos. The obvious one is, if you want to go and watch. So everybody learns differently. That's a great thing about this. You've got lots of stuff you can read, things you can listen to. But if you're more of a visual person, I'm quite visual. I like to see things being done and then try them out. So, obviously the big one is YouTube as well. And there's, funnily enough, we haven't got many on here, but there's there's going to be thousands of them. We sort of summarized a few. We mentioned Channel 9 a minute ago. Obviously, you've got Channel 9. You've got lots of other .NET channels as well that you can listen to. Scott Hanselman does. He's recently done a lot more. He sort of used to blog predominantly, but he's done a lot more videos now. And he's done lots of videos, not just on sort of .NET tech. He's sort of going back to what people learn in computer studies courses. So he's actually sort of teaching
going back
people
to the basics. Fundamentals and creating bite-sized videos, which are quite useful.
Right. They're really interesting. Absolutely. So again, we mentioned Nick Chapsass. He's very good. I'd recommend that. The videos he puts together are really good. Again, bite-sized, not too long, and it normally touches on the newer stuff. But, he'll then go, there's other stuff he'll touch on. But it's quite nice because he sort of shows you the ins and outs of what he's doing. So he'll show you him benchmarking stuff to prove that actually, this way of doing it doesn't allocate so much memory or doesn't take as much resource. And he'll actually show you how he's done that, which is great. You don't see that with quite a few videos. And then, somebody called Anna, I'm going to kill her name again, Kubal, in I pronounce it Kubel, but it's obviously it's not an English surname, so it's probably got some pronunciation Kubrul or something like that. But yeah, that's a series called Code with Anna Kubo, and she does a lot of JavaScript stuff. And again, it's just interesting seeing the stuff she does and the stuff you're using. And that one actually popped up for me because I do a thing called Coder Dojo, which is basically teaching youngsters about coding, and she does some really good videos about doing games with JavaScript and stuff. So I was looking at her material to get some ideas on things to teach them. So it's really good to sort of see what she does. And then, yeah, obvious ones, things like Pluralsight. So that sort of, like I said, there's hundreds of YouTube ones, but then other video sites, things like Pluralsight, Egghead, Scrimba, the ones that I use. So, you know, they're good to go and see. Obviously, some of them need subscriptions. Some of them have got free. Scrimba's got a lot of freebies. Pluralsight do free every now and then. And I think Egghead have got a few free ones. Egghead, very sort of Pluralsight covers most things. Egghead, Scrimba, more front-end stuff. So they're brilliant. They can be useful. But, yeah, okay, brilliant. What's next?
Off the back of all of those podcasts, blog sites, videos. Yes, yeah. There are various newsletters you can sign up to. You've already mentioned console.dev, yeah, which is a useful weekly newsletter those guys do. Adam Silver has got a newsletter off the back of his stuff. C#digest.net's another interesting one. Once you've read all your newsletters and you've got some spare time after listening to all of those hundreds of people, you can jump onto some of the Coding Carter websites and practice some of your algorithms and you know, enter a competition if you like. So you've got the likes of LeetCode, which is a useful site, Algo Experts, another one, algorithms and data structure sort of focused, good for preparing for if you're going for any engineering interviews, worthwhile getting onto these sites and really just sharpening up your skills. There's a thing that happens at this time of year called the Advent of Code, which is quite interesting. They do it every year, adventofcode.com, where they put up a new programming challenge each day. So it's worthwhile getting into those sites and trying some of those exercises. Quite often, if you're a dev and you're working in a particular domain, it's worthwhile getting yourself out of that domain, out of the thing that you think about all day, every day, and throwing yourself onto some of these sites because they'll throw up problems that may be areas that you don't think about a great deal. So worthwhile.
Yeah, it does.
Worthwhile,
yeah, it does. Especially out of your comfort zone, definitely. It makes you think about things differently. So that's useful, definitely. But I was going to say now, so we've gone through sort of the people, the podcast, the feeds, the videos, the newsletters, the trying it out, the catters. So if you've had enough of all this tech and you want to turn it all off, then you can't do better than getting a good book, going old school, getting a book and sitting and reading it somewhere quiet to actually sort of immerse yourself in it. So, you know, like I said, back in the day, books were all we had. You know, it's the best knowledge that you could get. But books go out of date really quickly. That's the biggest problem with it now. Things move so quickly. You know, it's pointless getting a book on a, I'll pick on JavaScript here. It's probably pointless getting a book on a JavaScript framework because by the time it's delivered, it's out of date.
Yeah,
because they move so fast. There's so many things happening. But, you know, some books are quite useful. Books about patterns or concepts are quite useful to have. They're useful to go back to and look at because they don't generally change. You know, the design patterns have been there for years. They're very well understood. They're useful to have a book to refresh on. So things like that, domain-driven design, clean code, series of books, which is one you mentioned, wasn't it, from Uncle Bob?
Uncle Bob's series. All useful books to have on the shelf and to go back and refer to because they are, in a way, they're quite timeless. They're not framework-specific, not technology-specific per se. They're more about approaches and ways of thinking. I mean, JavaScript, The Good Parts is another one of those books. I mean, it is obviously technology-specific, but that's an interesting look at JavaScript and a bit about where the language has come from and what the good parts are. So, worthwhile having on the shelf.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's right. So, okay. And then if, you know, everybody, you know, we've talked about this being community-driven and some of these sites are community-driven. Obviously, all of it really is now, you know, even things like YouTube, Twitter, they're all community in a way because, you know, you talk to people, you put comments on things. But, you know, there's dedicated communities. Ones that I use, things like Indie Hackers came up a few years ago now, you know, before lockdowns and everything. We were meeting up in Brighton, weren't we, with a group of people to talk about indie hacking. And it was more around building small tools that were useful to people and, you know, looking at opportunities for entrepreneurship and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a website. It's got lots of resources, lots of people to talk to, but they allow you to set up local meetups, and that's all we used to do in Brighton, which was quite useful. And then, you know, practical.net.io is a new one. There was a guy that I was following, a guy called John Hilton, and he started a new community, which, again, it's building into a very useful resource to talk to people more based around Blazor and stuff like that at the moment. They're very into that, so it's somewhere to go for that. And then sort of alt.net groups. Again, there's a local one to us that I've been to a few times. But there's going to be these sorts of meetups everywhere. And they can be a bit daunting, to be honest. Even I haven't been to it for quite a while now. But there's a local guy called Mike Hadlow who runs the Brighton one, I think, still. I think he still does it. It's been that long since I've been. But, yeah, these useful things to go to just to get to know the local community. It's the classic. It's not what you know. It's who you know. You know, if you get to know these people, they can be really useful resources because one day you're going to go along to a job and there's going to be these people there because it's a small community really. So, you know, it's useful to get to know your fellow devs and sort of be able to talk to people and get involved in things.
Not to mention just, you know, share experiences with different people. Yeah, you know, absolutely. They're enjoyable social that's things right. to go along to.
Yeah, definitely. So
Marvelous. I mean, that's a lot of stuff we've covered there. And to be honest, that's just a small sprinkling of each of those areas. Yeah. The internet is full of amazing resources from a development point of view, and we just had a note down here saying it's important not to get too caught up with trying to keep up with everyone at once, because you could quite easily spend 24 hours a day, you know, for the next 3 months just trying to catch up with everything. But you've got to balance it out really with what's maintainable. And if you can set up a bit of a routine where, you know, maybe you check in on Twitter or you sign up to some of these newsletters, or, you know, you set aside a bit of spare time to watch some of these videos or read some of these blog entries, I think you're well on the way to keeping up with what's going on.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the same time, you shouldn't get too caught up with or too stressed about trying to just keep up with everything, because it's not really achievable.
It's not. You can only do what you can do. You know, there's a limit of time in the day, and you need to break it up properly. You need to have some downtime. You need to have some family time.
Absolutely.
Time off. You can't be doing this 24/7.
That's why podcasts are quite good, because if you're commuting, if you're driving somewhere, if you're on the train, stick a podcast on in the background. Absolutely. And it's a nice way to keep up.
There's a few really good .NET ones out there, so do a search for them.
Yeah, .NET Rambles, I hear, is pretty
Rambles.
Good.
Absolutely. But cool. So just leaves us with the OS project or utility of the week.
What have we got this week?
This week, yeah. So this week we've got OBS, which is the Open Broadcaster software. So I only came across this a few months back. We were looking at doing some videos, weren't we?
Yeah.
And we were trying to work out the best way of sort of screen sharing and both being on the video. Why anybody would want to see us, I don't know. Still sort of up for debate that. But basically, yeah, best way of sort of sharing possibly both our screens at the same time to see what we can do or see what we're doing. So yeah, this OBS popped up, and it seems to be really well regarded and used by lots and lots of people. And so again, it's just an amazing tool for being free open source. It's an amazing tool that lets you record multiple screens, have transitions, all sorts. It's huge. It's massive. I've not even scratched the surface yet. So yeah, if you need to do some recording and share screens with people, it's a good one to go to.
Good stuff. So obsproject.com, worthwhile checking out, all open source.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Well, I think that about wraps us up. I think we're just about out of time.
Yeah, we are indeed. Yes. It's been great.
It was really interesting to sort of cover all of those different areas of community. It's certainly something that I try and keep in check and keep in balance, is to try and keep up with what's happening in the industry. Thankfully, you know, there's so many resources available. It's not that hard to do. It's just a matter of balancing and finding, you know, choosing, you know, curating and working out what you're going to dedicate your precious time to, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's it. Yeah. That's it. Just pick some that work for you and go with them, and be, you know, open to changing them every now and then, just to try different ones, see what else is coming out. So yeah, absolutely.
Marvelous. Well, let's leave it there. And I look forward to our next chat. Cheers, Andy.
Yeah, no, thanks very much for that, Ran. Speak soon. Take care.
You too. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.